pretty much last summer, 2010, in the Gulf of Mexico. Any of you have ever been to that particular region during the summer, you know it's just one awful hellhole of a place to go. So I'm going to go through these very quickly. I pared this down from an hour presentation. I've just been told I only have 12 minutes. Well, 17. Oh, okay. So I'll get going really quickly. On April the 20th in 2010, an explosion and fire erupted on the BP Deepwater Horizon rig, killing 11 people. Now this this rig was located in at BP's Macondo site, which is located approximately about 50 miles southeast of Venice, Louisiana, where all the reporters were reporting from. So right down in this little area is where it occurred, and as a result of the spill, I'm going to show you slides where the oil spill actually progressed in a fairly large area. Now, this is always an interesting portion of talking about disasters. You know, how can you really prepare for a disaster that was never supposed to have occurred? And one of the things from my experience of being down there is that the logistics of getting around, getting people to the places where they need to be, staging equipment, the manpower, having the right people at the right places, and equipment tracking for industrial hygienists, if you're doing monitoring, trying to find out what exposures are, it becomes a very critical issue. Now, these are the images that you saw on TV during the summer, but one of the things that when you're actually in the fight or sort of right there on the scene, you see the struggle between the public perception and what, and in this case with BP, the very large public, the corporate image that they were trying to maintain. In the very initial days, and I was brought in fairly early, BP sort of felt, you know, you get the sense when you're working in the command center that BP felt really guilty and they were just throwing money at everything. You know, the Wildlife Federation was saying, oh, we need money for this. OSHA was saying this. Everybody who had an initial was down there. DOD, DOJ, everybody was there. So it becomes a real struggle. And you would see sheens of things. Now, when they sent me out, this is just part of an editorial that was down there. I felt like they were talking about me when I got sent out to the actual incident site. But this was my ride. As you see it from just the outskirts, you think, oh, geez, you know, they gave him a dedicated helicopter and sent him out to the incident site. Well, it doesn't really quite work that way. They made me go through a sea survival training where, and I'm an old Navy guy, so I thought this would be easy, but they have a simulated helicopter, and they put you in these, strap you in, and they take you, submerge you, and then they turn it upside down. You know, and about five times of doing that in a four-hour period, you know, it gets a little hairy. But I was out at the incident site approximately 12 days after the rig sunk. And this is what you would see. This is the Discovery Enterprise out there, and it was right over the site trying to capture what oil that was leaking. I will tell you for anybody here who is not already angry at BP, your anger may very well be justified, but there is a lot more to it than just what you see on the news sometimes. I was sent out to the incident site because the concern was all of these support vessels that you see in this area and the drilling rigs and things like this, sometimes the wind would shift and these people were subjected to high numbers of VOCs. And going in, what we wanted to do was ensure that we had this activated charcoal filters on their ventilation systems to sort of cut down some of the effluent that was coming into those particular ships. Because before they had that, they were using this just normal type of screen that you would have, your filtering screens that you would have, and you know, they really don't stop organic volatiles or anything like this. So you wanted to use activated. And, you, and I put this like this so you could sort of see the comparison of the size. The day before I got to the incident site, the levels of benzene. Well, first let me give you some perspective. The permissible exposure level for benzene is one part per million, you know, enforced by OSHA. At this particular site, at the incident site, the day before I got there, the levels were 37 parts per million. Now, if you're not used to dealing with these kind of numbers, let me just tell you, the air was poison, and people were being subjected to this. So it was pretty horrible situation. I was looking at, on the drilling sites, pretty much these large ventilation systems where they pull these drawers out and put in the filters. And this is just from, one of the drilling sites. There was platforms that was out there, and you could sort of see this is the Discovery Enterprise right over the actual incident site. Now, flying back in from the incident site, what you would see is the dispersants that they were putting over there, when they put it on the oil, it would sort of have this reddish color. And one of the things that I discovered, one of the things that really came to mind flying in, is that I'd gone through all this sea survival training where they flipped me upside down. Of course, from this level, you know, helicopters don't glide. If anything happens, we're going down faster than a bucket of chicken at Oprah's. So, you know, I'm not so sure that, you know, going through sea survival training is all that necessary. The dispersant issue is one that sort of lingers. Should you have used dispersants? I'm telling you right now, the shrimp boat has hated the dispersant. For other reasons. I hated it because it didn't. In one sense, it made some sense, but I look at it from purely the scientific side of it, that there wasn't enough information, enough toxicological data to talk about using dispersants. They were using, this was one of the old canisters that I saw at the place where I was doing some monitoring. They were using initially Corexic 9527. And if you go to the site, I know you can't see this. I thought the screen might be a little larger. But if you go to the site where I have this presentation, the whole material safety data sheet is available. I only show this to say, now, a company can revise its material safety data sheet at any time. Mm-hmm. This is the revised version. But still in this, there is this little line that says environmental precautions. Do not contaminate surface water. Do not contaminate. They were putting thousands of gallons of this stuff in the Gulf. Now, the EPA finally said, hey, look, you know, this stuff is too toxic. And the toxic ingredient primarily they were concerned with 2-butoxyethanol, one of the elements in the original. So the EPA said, you know, you need to go to something less toxic. So then they went to Corexic EC95008. The only thing that's different in this one is the 2-butoxyethanol is taken out. And if you go through the material safety data sheet, the new improved one, because a lot of attention was being brought to this, what you will see is still the environmental precaution. Do not contaminate surface water. This stuff was never meant to be used in an open ocean or anything like that. If you had a spill in your backyard, yeah, use the, you know, the dispersant, break it up, clean it up, absorb it up, is easy. But large amounts like they were putting out there was really something. Now, as you can see, this is June 3rd, and this was sort of the picture of how the spill was progressing. And I apologize that you can't see this as well, but here again, this is the incident site. Over here is Venice. There are these green things that you see right here. These are bird sanctuaries where you had a lot of pelicans. And of course, the economic impact was something that was concerned all over the Gulf. I was sent at one point to Gulfport, Mississippi, to Stennis International Airport. You know, I was expecting, I'd never been there, so I was expecting, you know, this large airport with people coming and going. Oh, this is just an airfield in the middle of a wooded section of Mississippi. Apparently, I don't know if any of you are familiar with John C. Stennis. He was a big appropriation guy, and before he left the Senate, he named everything in Mississippi after him. So this was one of the fields I was going to, and they were using these 131s to, they would load the dispersant onto these, and they would fly out after they had sent spotter planes to find out where the oil was. I was doing some monitoring to find out what kind of background exposures were occurring. At the time when I arrived, they were actually cutting back on the dispersants for just a small period of time because there was so much public heat on this particular topic. Now, as we continued to move, this was a continual tracking of where the oil was, because the oil didn't just come up from the oil spill and then move in a certain way. It would circulate, and most of the oil that was out there was under the water, under the surface. But as you can see, these little dots, these are all drilling rigs. It's interesting that the Louisiana area, the Gulf of Mexico, a place where Mother Nature routinely takes a dump, would have to deal with this oil spill. But everyone who is in the fishing industry has someone who, a relative or something who is working in the oil industry. So it's a huge conflicting issue down there that on one hand they want their fishing industry and on another hand they want the oil industry. Now, home away from home. I don't know if any of you have ever heard anyone talk about their experiences in the Gulf of Mexico and certainly during the oil spill, but if they were working in the command center, and I would have to go into the command center every once in a while to change out equipment or get something. These guys, they were in a nice big air-conditioned area. They BP fed them breakfast, lunch, dinner if they were still around. If you got tired during the day, you could go get a massage. I mean, it was really nice. These guys were, in the afternoon, they were getting fresh baked cookies and, you know, and ice cream. Where I was located, I was getting Gatorade and heat stroke. So, and this is just one of the flotels that they have. Socialization skills, very important if you're living out here. But the problem was is that I was also living in the initial days of the spill. I was living with parolees, work release convicts, a huge menagerie of I don't want to say neurotic or psychological problems, but certainly it was an issue living on this particular thing. These are essentially just canisters, four people per side on this end and four people on the other side with a sort of shower in between. So it was lovely, and we were using. They were storing a lot of these socks that they use for absorbing the material, the oil. And this is what you would see actually when you would go to some of the bird refuge areas where oil, some of the residue was washing ashore. We would have to get on these crew boats, leave every morning at 6 o'clock. So I saw a lot of sunrises and sunsets. And sometimes it would take us as long as 4 hours to get just to the site where we were going to be picking up the shrimp boaters. And there was a fleet of shrimp boats out there. They used these booms. They would lower these into the water. And then they would run those socks out, and they would try to absorb as much oil as they could. So it was really a nasty, dirty situation. But, good. I'm running out of time. I'm going to speed up. You would see these oil booms would get fairly fairly dirty. Now, when you first would come into an area where there might be oil, you see maybe just a little spot like this. But then the oil, the weathered oil, would actually look like this, and that's when the workers would actually start to suit up and get ready to start collecting. As you can see, BP provided a lot of Gatorade. If I never have another Gatorade in my life, I'm fine with that. But the oil is actually suppressed as a result of the dispersant. You would see a large amount of the oil that actually stayed below the surface, and we chased that near the end of the summer. We were chasing the plume of oil that was pretty much going around, and I was on a research vessel near the end to see what kind of effects it had on dolphins and whales. This that you would see that would wash up ashore, I will say this, and I've already been sued once by the people who represent BP. They dropped it, but you know, the lawsuit hung over me for talking about this. But the lawyers got involved, and it got to the point where, as an industrial hygienist, we were no longer doing industrial hygiene. They didn't want to know what was coming off of this. They only wanted to know whether or not the effluent that you would see at the incident site was there. And by the time it washed into shore, this wasn't true. So if there are any lessons learned, there's this. If you're in charge of a large operation where just everything has gone wrong, you may want to still get yourself an auditor. You want to have an auditor on the site because you want to know BP was throwing huge amounts of money at all kinds of problems, but they weren't always getting the people who they actually needed. Companies were, one Alabama company went from 99 staff members to 800, and they bragged about the fact that, well, we hired all these people, you know, in our area. But you can't tell me that 700 occupational safety and health people were out of work in Arkansas. So, you know, they were bringing in a lot of people. And so you need to have someone checking to see if, in fact, so this is as far as I can go. So, primarily, the Gulf looked a lot better in the end. Okay, so are there any questions?
We'll take the questions at the end.
Oh, we'll take the questions at the end.
Okay, then I'm finished. Sorry, I didn't say that. Thank you so much.
Okay.